Monday, August 13th, 2018, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly. I am coming to you from the Mile High City. We are right here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back again this Monday to discuss the world of sports with what is a dose of common sense, which greatly seems to be needed right now in the sports world. You know, I hope that you enjoyed your weekend. Now, you might not realize this, but today, Monday, August 13th, is actually National Left-Handers Day. So I'm just throwing this out there. If you know any people that are of the left-handed persuasion, hey, make sure to remind them that they are not, in fact, of the devil, as many cultures used to think. I know here in the States, many times if you were a left-handed kid growing up, I guess this is going back to the 50s or whatever, sometimes they would tie one hand down. Sometimes they would smack you if you used the wrong hand. I don't know why that was. I don't know why in the world anyone ever thought being left-handed was wrong, because we have seen some absolutely incredible athletes that were left-handed. And I don't know why it is. Lefties, for some reason, they seem to make certain things just look so super smooth. I don't know why that is. I don't know why if you're left-handed, for some reason, it just looks better. Visually, it's just better. Like, you think of Ken Griffey Jr. He had as pretty of a swing as you will ever see in your life. He was a lefty. So did Barry Bonds. I mean, as smooth of a swing as you could ever see, Barry Bonds absolutely had that. But you even switch over to other sports. Maybe you think about football, and you think of a quarterback like Steve Young, and his delivery was a little bit different, but his delivery just looked so smooth. It just looked so perfect. Even someone like Ken Stabler, who was one of the most accurate passers ever in the NFL, left-hander. Of course, we know Phil Mickelson is a lefty, but so was Bill Russell. When you think of some other sports, Martina Navratilova, left-hander. Also in tennis, Rafael Nadal is a lefty. In soccer even, Lionel Messi is a lefty. And you might not realize this. You're going to think I'm joking when I say this. You might not realize this. Did you know that LeBron James actually writes with his left hand? Now, we all know he plays basketball for the most part. His right hand is his strong hand. He shoots with his right hand. But he is actually left-handed when it comes to writing. So LeBron James, I guess, technically would be considered a left-hander, sort of, except for doesn't play that way. And by the way, as we all know, come on, let's be honest, Michael Jordan probably writes with his left hand a little bit better, doesn't he?
Oh, no, you didn't.
Hey, if you would like to contact the show, let us know. I don't know, maybe your favorite left-hander of all time. Hit us up on email, dailydosports@gmail.com, or go over to Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at dailydosports. Feel free to follow us over there. But maybe you have a list. Maybe you have a question. It doesn't have to be a national story. It doesn't even have to be about left-handers. Maybe you've got a question about a specific team. Maybe you've got a question about a specific player or a specific situation or something in history or something you would like us to cover. Feel free to send it. We will always take the time to get you an answer. And you never know, we just might end up using it on the show. We would love to hear from you. Hey, today on the show, of course, we will be recapping the weekend in sports. And a lot of times the best way we do that is we take a look back at a few of the things that we learned from the past 2 days in sports. Because, you know, it's not enough for us here at The Dose just to watch sports. We want to actually be learning something. We want to actually take something from it. We try to grab some information here or there from the weekend when we watch some of these sporting events that do take place. So let's get started. And right up front, wow, did we learn, at least for me personally, that Tiger Woods seems like he really wants to make me eat my words here on The Dose. We had some serious excitement at the PGA Championship in St. Louis all weekend, but Sunday was absolutely incredible. Of course, Brooks Koepka led the field after the first three rounds. He was up 2 strokes. But you had Adam Scott, you had Justin Thomas, and yes, you had Tiger Woods chasing. And you know, it had to be, you would think, a little unnerving for Koepka and Adam Scott, who were the leaders, to be hearing the roars from the gallery as Tiger kept coming up with shot after shot after shot. And you could just hear this explosion of fans. And they had to be going, what in the world is going on with Tiger? Like, is he just hitting holes in one, play after play after play? Because he just kept coming up with huge shots. It was crazy. Like, if you didn't watch the PGA Championship, you kind of missed out on something pretty cool. Now, the funny thing about Tiger, when you watch that, all day on Sunday, his driver was killing him. He literally didn't hit a fairway on the front nine. Never hit one. His putter, it was a little above average, but it wasn't great. But he just kept wedging his way into contention, and it was fun to see him making that push on Sunday. That is as exciting a PGA event as we have seen in the past, I couldn't tell you, 4 or 5 years maybe. Tiger shot a 64 on Sunday, and he was in contention. He didn't shoot a 64 after everything was decided. No, he shot it while it was all still in the balance. Hey, very impressive showing by Tiger Woods. Tiger would actually finish up in second place on Sunday. Of course, meanwhile, Brooks Koepka, he just looked like he had ice in his veins all weekend. He never got rattled. As much as you would think, those roars from the gallery might unnerve Koepka. He didn't seem to care. He just never pushed too hard. He stayed steady, and he grinded out hole after hole after hole. And you know, as I was watching this unfold, I started to think, if you're the PGA right now, do you want Tiger Woods to win an event right now? Because I have to think that they probably don't. Like, he's bringing so much excitement right now. If Tiger were to actually win one, the luster would be off a little. As exciting as it would be, don't get me wrong, it would be insanely excited. You could see how crazy the crowd was on Sunday at the PGA Championship in St. Louis. Can you imagine if he had actually won it? People were losing their minds watching him. But I mean, when the Chicago Cubs finally win the World Series, like, we kind of stop caring a little bit, don't we? Like, we don't watch them quite as closely. We're like, oh yeah, they did that. Who cares if they do it again? So you have to kind of wonder, do they want Tiger to win yet? Or would you rather have him hold off and maybe have the big, huge rally? I don't know, maybe the end of this year, or maybe even next year. Meanwhile, everyone's saying, hey, can you do it? Can you do it? Is this finally the one? Is this finally the time? And you have to think the PGA is like, let's just kind of string this out a little bit longer. Like, you don't want this to happen just yet. But hey, at least Tiger is in competition again. Like I said, he is making me rethink whether or not he can win another major. He says he's playing 4 more tournaments in a row. So I guess we're going to see if he can keep this up. And it's not going to be easy, because back in Tiger's heyday, we saw guys right there in contention like we saw on Sunday. Except for when they saw Tiger coming, they started to melt down. That's not the case anymore. You have guys like Brooks Koepka. You have guys like Adam Scott. You have guys like Justin Thomas, Francesco Molinari. Hey, they don't blink. They just keep driving through. Tiger's going to have his work cut out for him. I still think it's going to be tough, but he's starting to make me wonder if he is capable of actually pulling off another major. Hey, coming back, we are going to continue our look at what we learned from the weekend in sports. You know, the NFL preseason is fully underway now, and we learned a few things by watching those games. Plus, we have some scandalous behavior taking place in college football right now.
On a day such as this, we pray the car won't let us down. But winter sneers, and the battery bails, the bulbs blow, the wipers wipe out. Can anyone save you?
Yes, you. Come to Halfords. We'll check your wiper blades, batteries, bulbs, oil and windscreen. We'll even top up your screen wash, all completely free. And we're open late, 7 days a week. Find your local store now at Halfords.com. Ready for the cold snap? Ready for anything. Halfords, for life's journeys.
Subject to availability. Opening times vary.
So continuing with what we learned over the weekend in sports, and let's move over to the NFL, because we learned on Sunday that Miami Dolphins quarterback Ryan Tannehill, he is not apparently messing around this season. Hey, you have to know that Ryan Tannehill has heard the rumors that this is a make or break year for his career. We've kind of seen him do okay, never really do anything in the postseason, never really kind of be the quarterback everyone expected. And so everyone's kind of saying, hey, this year he needs to step up. Head coach Adam Gase could be in some trouble. Ryan Tannehill has got to finally get things together. He's got to finally lead the Dolphins to something, anything. And on Sunday, Ryan Tannehill showed a surprise glimpse that maybe he really is going to push it this year. Because on Sunday, during Dolphins practice, he actually yelled at rookie Kalen Ballage and kicked him out of the huddle after the running back missed a blocking assignment that resulted in a clean sack by a Dolphins teammate. You know, Tannehill's not usually an outspoken guy, but he actually stopped practice, chewed out Ballage, and then threw him out of the offensive huddle. How about that from Ryan Tannehill? Dude really seems to want it this year. Now, head coach Adam Gase says he's fully supportive of his quarterback. He said he actually liked seeing the passion and the fire from Ryan Tannehill. Hey, and I'm right there with you, Adam Gase. I get it. Because it is huge as a head coach when your players start to police themselves. Because after a while, they're sick of the head coach saying it again and again. Hey, you guys figure some of these things out yourselves. If the quarterback steps up and says, hey, you get this done. Then as a head coach, I say, okay, I don't have to say it. And you know what? Usually peer to peer, teammates will go ahead and do what their teammate asked them to do. So you're probably going to see an improvement in that player because Tannehill chewed him out. This could be maybe a sign that the Miami Dolphins and Ryan Tannehill, maybe they're going to take a step forward. Maybe finally, after always being the team, oh, they've got potential every single year. Maybe this year, the Miami Dolphins are going to assert themselves into that picture in the AFC East. Could we finally see someone challenge the New England Patriots? I don't know. Maybe it's the Miami Dolphins. Maybe the Miami Dolphins are going to step up and contend in the AFC. Or, I mean, maybe Ryan Tannehill is just really starting to freak out and starting to think, you know what? My career might be over and he might just be melting down completely by week 5. I don't know. Either way.
Man, that's just mean.
I guess something's happening in Miami. We're not exactly sure what, but Ryan Tannehill's pretty fired up. You know, we also learned, and I hate to say this one, that the Washington Redskins are being chomped on by the injury bug already this season. Washington suffered yet another season-ending injury as wide receiver Robert Davis blew his right knee in practice on Saturday. Now, Davis actually also suffered a broken tibia. He is now the third Washington player to already be gone for the entire season. If you didn't see it, rookie running back Darius Geis, he went down on Thursday. He tore his ACL in Thursday's preseason loss to the New England Patriots. And you know, Darius Geis had been looking pretty good prior to that injury. I mean, his draft stock had fallen because Geis is kind of a weird guy. He's kind of a goofball. And I think he had scared some teams off. Not so much from his talent perspective, but just from the perspective, I don't know, he's kind of a goofball. Maybe he's a little immature. Maybe he doesn't always take accountability. But there's no question that he's talented. But it scared some teams off, so he fell to Washington. And they're saying that in camp, he was really looking good. He had already, they say, nailed down the starting job. And at the beginning of the Patriots game on Thursday night, he was running through some people. He was making the Patriots defense look pretty bad. Darius Geis had a really nice start on his rookie season. And now it's too bad to see him go out. But that's not all, because tight end Manasse Garner also tore his ACL in that game too. When you look at Washington, this is not the kind of start that head coach Jay Gruden needs, when most likely we are looking at Jay Gruden this year with Washington and saying, hey, your job is on the line. You need to do something. You haven't done anything yet. Not a great start for Washington so far this preseason. And speaking of the preseason, did you watch any of the NFL games? I'll be honest, I watched more preseason football games than I honestly even care to admit. Really. And, you know, I watch them and I know they're going to be horrible, but I still do it because it is football. And at this time of the year, when there's nothing else on, I am basically like a heroin addict just jonesing for a hit. Just please give me something to watch. So I'm flipping through. I'm watching all kinds of preseason games. Games that are terrible. Games I don't even know players that are playing. I'm watching like the fourth string for Detroit and like, oh, didn't that running back used to play for Penn State one time? I don't know. It's just bad. Preseason football is bad. And me sitting there watching it like an idiot is worse. You know, on Friday night, the Atlanta Falcons faced the New York Jets. And again, I was sitting there like an idiot and watching it. I mean, those were the teams that were playing. We basically saw the junior varsity representative for both. It wasn't really any of the top players for either team playing. But I did learn on Friday night watching Jets versus Falcons that the Jets quarterback competition, yeah, it's going to be extremely tight. Now, I know right now Josh McCown is the veteran and he is listed as their starter. I guess probably if the season were to start today, Josh McCown would be the New York Jets starting quarterback. But watching that game against Atlanta, and again, I know, against bad competition, with bad teammates, just ugly situation, ugly game. But hey, Teddy Bridgewater, he looked like he is definitely capable of taking the starting job come week one. Teddy Bridgewater went 7 for 8 for 85 yards and a touchdown. He didn't play that much. That is exactly what you want to see for Teddy Bridgewater. You want to see him go out and compete. You want to see him look like a quarterback that could be capable of starting. But that wasn't it. Because then we saw third string quarterback rookie Sam Darnold come in and he made a case that he should be a starting quarterback too. Because Darnold went 13 for 18 for 96 yards and he threw a touchdown of his own. Hey, this New York Jets quarterback race, it is going to go to the wire. Now, as far as the Jets season, I don't know if that's a good thing. I have no idea if that's a good thing. Like, you're still trying to figure out who your quarterback is. You have no idea. It might be this guy who had an injury that nearly took his life, or it might be a rookie who has never been in an NFL game in his life. They could be your starters. I don't know if it's good for the Jets, but I'll say this. It's good for me because it is highly interesting to watch. Now, also on Friday night, we got to see the Oakland Raiders taking on the Detroit Lions, like I said. I watched way too much of this game that I shouldn't even admit how much I watched. And we saw head coach John Gruden returning to the sideline, and we learned that John Gruden is still John Gruden. I mean, the Oakland Raiders beat the Lions 16-10. They actually got a touchdown pass from Connor Cook and beat the Lions on Friday night. But we have seen over these past few years, we have seen a softer, gentler John Gruden. He's up in the broadcast booth. He's, I like this guy, and I'll tell you something about this guy. And he's got all these goofy things that he says that don't even make any sense. We have no idea what he's talking about half the time. So we haven't seen him in like full-on Chucky mode in a few years now. But on the Raiders' opening drive on Friday night, we saw a 60-yard touchdown run by Marshawn Lynch get called back for holding. And there was Gruden in all his Chucky gloriousness. He's on the sideline screaming like a maniac at the officials on a holding call that probably should have been called. After the game, Gruden had this to say. He said it was awesome. He said, I saw some recognizable faces that had gotten a little bit older. I saw some old friends who mean a lot to me. Like I said all along, this is a great responsibility. The nostalgia has worn off. We have to do something with the opportunity. But it sure was great to see the Raider fans. And you know, looking at Gruden on the sideline, he looked like he was having a good time. I would imagine that for him, it was exciting to see those fans. It was probably extremely exciting to see how hyped they are, to have some excitement finally back on that sideline. Some excitement in their franchise. Something to look at in the Oakland Raiders and be like, yes, this team might be doing something with John Gruden. And you know, it was probably also super exciting for Gruden to know that he doesn't have to go to that pit of a stadium for much longer because the Raiders are going to be heading to a state-of-the-art facility in Las Vegas very, very soon. And you know, I'll bet John Gruden was a little bit excited about that too. Hey, thanks for everything. It was good to see you guys. See ya, suckers. We're heading to Vegas. Because don't forget, that is coming very, very soon. One more thing I learned in the NFL over the weekend. I learned that Trevor Siemian, he still really likes playing in Denver. Of course, the problem is that now he is the second string quarterback in Minnesota. And he came back to Denver on Saturday night when the Vikings played the Broncos in their first preseason game. But hey, Trevor Siemian threw 2 touchdowns against his former team as the Vikings beat the Broncos 42-28. And say whatever you want about Siemian. You can sit there and say, well, he's not a franchise quarterback. He's not this, he's not that. Trevor Siemian continued his dominance over Broncos second string quarterback Paxton Lynch, who looks like Brock Osweiler, I don't know, 1.0. Siemian beat out Lynch already once last year. He went 11 for 17 for 165 yards and 2 touchdowns on Saturday night. Meanwhile, for the Broncos, yeah, first round draft pick Paxton Lynch, he went 6 of 11. He had 24 yards and he had an interception. Hey, good move on Paxton Lynch, John Elway. Can you believe he was drafted with a first round pick? He doesn't even look like he belongs in an NFL uniform. And I'm not saying, oh, he just has to find the right spot. He just needs to. No, he doesn't look like he has any business being an NFL quarterback. I mean, it is bad. It's funny because coming out of Memphis, the knock on Paxton Lynch was that, hey, if he has to run at all, if he has to scramble at all, if he's doing any kind of rollout, that kind of thing, he's really, really inaccurate. Sometimes he can throw a decent deep ball, but he's really, really inaccurate if he's on the move trying to throw. So what do the Broncos do? They are usually a team that runs a lot of play-action rollout stuff. They go draft Paxton Lynch. What about that somehow fit in John Elway's mind? Like, what did John Elway look at and be like, that's the guy? Let's see. He doesn't throw very well on the run. Check. He's got that going for him. He's not so good off the play action. Check. Got that going for him. Nice job, John Elway. I haven't seen this kind of inaccuracy since, I don't know, Lance Armstrong said he was drug-free.
I was way off.
Ugh, it is absolutely brutal to watch Paxton Lynch in a football game right now. You know, let's switch over to college football. Because we actually saw a few things taking place in college football over the weekend, and they were more of the, let's say, scandalous nature. Because we learned that the University of Maryland football program, yeah, it is in some serious, serious trouble. Maryland announced Saturday that head football coach DJ Durkin has been placed on administrative leave after reports of a toxic environment within his program. Yeah, that's not going to be very good news when the season starts in like 2 weeks, is it? This comes after three staff members were also put on leave following an ESPN report that detailed an environment within Maryland football based on fear and intimidation and questions about the workout that led to the death of offensive lineman Jordan McNair. That actually took place back in June. Heat stroke was officially listed as the cause of death for the 19-year-old McNair, who had difficulty finishing a set of 110-yard sprints and was found to have a body temperature of over 106 degrees at a local hospital. Following his death, the McNair family retained a law firm to represent them, and they said at the time, yeah, a lawsuit's coming. You better brace up because we're going to probably be suing. Then last week, ESPN releases a report with allegations of this toxic coaching environment under Durkin. Multiple sources close to the program describe past behavior of intimidation, humiliation, and verbal abuse that has created a culture of fear for the Maryland football players. The sources also reveal allegations of unhealthy eating habits and that the coaching staff was using food against the players. Yeah, that's exactly what you want to do. If you're a young coach right now, just take down some notes. Hey, one thing we should do, let's see, we've got to teach these kids something. You know what we could do? We could withhold certain food from them. Yeah, that'll make their performance much, much better. What in the world is going on at Maryland? On Friday, Maryland announced two more staff members are placed on administrative leave. On Saturday, Durkin was placed on administrative leave. Hey, this program is probably going to get burned to the ground. And based off what we're hearing, yeah, it probably should get burned to the ground. But my problem is I do feel bad for the poor kids that are currently there just trying to play football. I mean, they didn't do this. It isn't their fault. They just went to a school and like, hey, I want to go play football. Oh, Maryland? I can go play there? I guess I'll go play there. They're not the ones at fault. Yet who is it that suffers almost every single time in youth sports? The kids. Not the adults that screw the things up. It's the kids that suffer. These kids from Maryland, right now, the NCAA should be stepping in saying, hey, if you want to transfer out, if you want to go somewhere else while we burn this program that you're in to the ground, feel free. We'll let you transfer anywhere you want to. Because this is an absolutely horrible situation. And again, the adults are the ones screwing it up. Speaking of college football scandals, we also learned over the weekend that apparently Texas Longhorns head coach Tom Herman, he just might be getting stitches. Let's just say that. Because a report published on Facebook on Saturday says it was Texas head coach Tom Herman that tipped college football reporter Brett McMurphy to look into Ohio State assistant coach Zach Smith's relationship with his ex-wife Courtney, and that there were multiple allegations of physical abuse. Of course, we all know now that Smith was fired in July after reports of that alleged abuse, and now Ohio State is investigating whether or not Coach Urban Meyer knew about the incident, and if so, why he didn't properly report it at the time. Now, something to keep in mind, Tom Herman was Meyer's offensive coordinator at Ohio State from 2012 to 2014. Zach Smith was the receivers coach during that time. Now, Tom Herman has denied the report. He says it is absolutely untrue. Here's what Herman had to say. Neither I nor anybody in my family has ever communicated with Brett McMurphy about the situation at Ohio State. But I mean, honestly, isn't that exactly what someone who had snitched would say? Now, I have no idea whether or not Tom Herman is the guy who ratted out Smith, but I know this. I know this for an absolute fact. I know that I am hoping, I am praying, I am begging for an Ohio State versus Texas bowl game this year, because that would be just an absolute soap opera. Please, whoever, just someone, make this happen. Please, please, please let Ohio State face Texas in a bowl game this year. Can you imagine Tom Herman and I guess maybe Urban Meyer, if he's still on the staff, having to shake hands before and after the game? Oh my goodness. And you know, you just know, because Urban has that side to him that he would just stone cold prison shank Tom Herman if he thought he was the guy that ratted him out, wouldn't he? Like, couldn't you see Urban Meyer doing something like that? There's something about that dude that, hey, he could be like a cold-blooded killer. I could see them just going up and, hey, coach, how you doing? Hey, gotcha. Oh, that's what you get. You know what snitches get. Hey, coming back, we are going to finish up with what we learned from the weekend in sports. We actually saw a few kind of weird stories coming out in the NBA. And this one team, it came out from one team. This one team has two new players they had better be very, very careful of. Just a quick reminder that if you have any shopping to do, you might want to head over to lootcrate.com/dailydose, where you can find the latest pop culture collectibles that feature your favorite TV shows, your favorite movies, and your favorite video games. August Loot Crate theme is now out. It is called Mayhem, because wherever they go, mayhem seems to follow. Celebrate some of your favorite havoc-wreaking characters and chaotic moments with exclusive gear and collectibles. August Loot Crate theme features items from Rick and Morty, Office Space, Harley Quinn, and DC Comics. But if none of those franchises interest you, trust me, go over to Loot Crate, check out the ones that they have over there, because they have just about any franchise you can possibly think of. The best part about ordering from Loot Crate, when you check out, just be sure you type Daily Dose in the coupon box. We are going to get you 10% off of your order. And maybe you're not interested in getting a monthly subscription. You don't have to. You can get a single crate. You can just buy individual items, but make sure you stop by lootcrate.com. You're going to like what you find over there. Hey, continuing with what we learned from the weekend in sports, and I want to shift over to the NBA. I know, it's not NBA season, although based on how long that season is, it's probably starting in a week or two. But we learned over the weekend that the Denver Nuggets, my hometown Denver Nuggets, they have signed themselves two players this offseason. I don't know. They might not quite be right. You'll see what I mean. First off, on Saturday, the Denver Nuggets had newly signed free agent point guard Isaiah Thomas posting a Twitter video that the city of Cleveland was, how can I say this here on the dose? A doo-doo hole? Let's say that. And that he could totally understand why LeBron left not once, but twice. Hey, that is not nice, Isaiah. Honest, maybe, but not nice. And of course, after everyone came down on him and started screaming at Isaiah, he jumped back on and he tweeted out an apology. Here's what he said in his apology. I shouldn't have said that. That was my fault. Cleveland was actually cool. It was all right. The situation just wasn't the best. That's what Thomas said on a video posted later on Saturday night. And I mean, he's right. The situation wasn't the best. Isaiah Thomas was traded last offseason to the Cleveland Cavaliers in that deal that sent Kyrie Irving to Boston. But because he was recovering from that hip injury, he didn't even play for Cleveland until January. And when he did, you could tell he probably still wasn't right. He only averaged 14 points a game after he had averaged 29 points a game the season before with Boston. Then, of course, he was moved to Los Angeles in February. So, I mean, hey, Isaiah's a little bitter. And we know Isaiah Thomas holds a grudge. He's still mad that the Celtics had the nerve to trade him for Kyrie Irving, even though it made obvious sense from their point of view. So maybe, I don't know, it's just that he's a little bitter about the way his career has taken this downward turn. Or maybe he was just, you know, playing and just kind of goofing off, and he didn't think anyone would see it. He didn't think it would blow up this much. So he takes a few shots at Cleveland for whatever reason. Or maybe, and I'm just throwing out this alternative idea, maybe Isaiah Thomas is still mad that he was too short to ride the roller coaster at Cedar Point. Oh. I don't know what is going through his mind, but Isaiah, stay off of Twitter if you don't have anything nice to say. You're just going to get yourself in trouble. It's not a good thing to do. But that actually wasn't the only sketchy report coming out of the Denver Nuggets organization over the weekend, because on Sunday, we got another report that I looked at and just said, wait, what? On Sunday, Nuggets rookie draft pick Michael Porter Jr. said in an interview that he is pain-free after a second surgery on his back, and the 14th overall pick in this past year's draft is hoping to be on the court near the beginning of this upcoming season. Here's what Porter had to say. I finally feel like good. I don't have a date yet, but I'm hoping to be back for the beginning of the year. Just got to heal up, but I feel great. I'm able to get on the court a little bit right now. I'm able to do some different things, but my rehab has definitely been very conservative. They're really taking it easy with me, being patient with me, but I don't have any pain right now. Now, if you don't know, Michael Porter underwent disc surgery in November of 2017 to repair one of two bulging discs in his back. Then he underwent a second spinal surgery in July. And the Nuggets haven't even announced a timetable for his return to basketball activities. But wait a second. Did you hear that date? July. He had another back surgery and he's all better? No pain? Here's the problem. It's August. Has it occurred to young Michael Porter Jr. that he might actually still be numb? It was surgery on your back. If you don't have some pain, there's a problem. You have no pain, really, none. So your back doesn't hurt at all? You just had surgery. Here's another question for Michael Porter. Do your fingers hurt? Can you feel your toes? Can you feel, let's say, I don't know, your arm was on the stove. Could you feel it? Or do you just smell the flesh burning? I'm telling you, I'm not sure about these two new acquisitions for my hometown, Denver Nuggets. Now, it might not seem like a big deal for a lot of different franchises. But here's the thing. I have followed this team long enough to know the Denver Nuggets franchise is cursed. Isaiah Thomas and Michael Porter Jr. had better get their lives together quick, because that long NBA season is going to be here before we know it. And these two are saying and doing things that just don't make any sense whatsoever. Nuggets, such a problem. Hey, you know, we've got another very interesting week here for you at the Daily Dose. Tomorrow, we will, of course, be discussing the latest stories coming out in the world of sports news. But as we continue to get closer and closer to the beginning of football season, we just might have to examine a few more things this week. Hey, I have to say thank you all so much for listening to The Daily Dose on your Monday. For all of you that share the show, it is very appreciated. Hey, if you're not subscribed to The Daily Dose wherever you listen, please be sure just to click that little follow or subscribe button. You will make sure that you don't miss a single episode. I have to say thank you to GSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all tomorrow. Have a wonderful Monday.
On a day such as this, we pray the car won't let us down. But winter sneers, and the battery bails, the bulbs blow, the wipers wipe out. Can anyone save you?
Yes, you. Come to Halfords. We'll check your wiper blades, batteries, bulbs, oil and windscreen. We'll even top up your screen wash, all completely free. And we're open late, 7 days a week. Find your local store now at halfords.com. Ready for the cold snap? Ready for anything. Halfords, for life's journeys.
Subject to availability. Opening times vary.